Back to our study of Deuteronomy. We are in chapter 20 of Deuteronomy. In our last session, we read the first four verses, but I just want to go back and remind you, they are receiving instructions concerning war. They're military fronts that they're getting ready to come across. And if you'll remember, if you look back in verses 3 and 4, they were given a word of encouragement to the whole nation that when ye approach the day of battle against their enemies, to let not their hearts be faint, to fear not, do not tremble, neither be terrified of them. And look at verse 4. Here's the promise. For the Lord your God is he that goes with you to fight for you against your enemies, to save you. In other words, keep your eyes on God. Don't get your eyes focused on the enemy at hand. And then right after that, we move into some instructions here. And the officers shall speak unto the people, saying, what man is there that hath built a new house and hath not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle and another man dedicate it. And what man is he that hath planted a vineyard and hath not yet eaten of it? Let him also go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle and another man eat of it. And what man is there that hath betrothed a wife and hath not taken her? Let him go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle and another man take her.
Now, there's a reason for all this. When you go into battle, you want people that are focused. So he says if a person has built a house, you know, if they haven't dedicated that house, in other words, they're thinking about the house and all this thing, the things they need to do, or if he's planted a vineyard and hasn't harvested the crop, eaten the crop yet, or if he's engaged to a woman that he hasn't married yet. In other words, we don't need any distractions, is the bottom line of all this. Then they were released not to go into battle, okay? You're going to read the next verse as well.
And the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, what man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted? Let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart.
Then also, if one was afraid, to the point that I'm talking about an extreme fear here, weak-hearted, then release him to go home, because he'll have a negative influence on the rest of them. Now, I'm a combat veteran from Vietnam, and a man that tells me that he's not afraid in different situations and circumstances, I don't believe him. But it's what you do with the fear. The fear can work for you, or the fear can work against you. There's a healthy fear, you understand. What he's talking about here is an unhealthy fear that will cause people's lives to be jeopardized. You understand, where a person can do something stupid, even shoot you, or whatever the case may be, you know. And so there's a reason for all this. And so what he's doing is weeding out this army to where when you go out to battle, you have an elite force. You have people that are there to get the job done. Now, when he first started out with this, he's telling them, don't be afraid of the enemy. Don't look at how big their army is or how well they're weaponized. Look to God. Now, to me, there's a principle in this for us today, because we face spiritual battles. We face opposition, in life. But we're to not to look at the opposition. We're to keep our eyes fixed on the Lord and understanding that greater is he who is in us than he who's in the world. And if the Lord is on our side, or we on the Lord's side, then we're assured of victory. But even if you win a battle, it doesn't mean that everything's smooth sailing. You understand? You can get some bumps and bruises and wounds along the way. I understand all that. Stay focused. Stay focused and never give up. Never give up. Keep your eyes on the Lord.
Verse 9, and it shall be when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, that they shall make the captains of the armies to lead the people.
In other words, you need someone directing the army, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so once you've weeded this thing out, and understand this is the priest, this is the spiritual leader that's speaking to the people, okay? Once he gets through speaking, then a man is appointed, a national officer addresses the soldiers, and he is to appoint a general in charge of this army. Not everybody doing their own thing, but to where you have strategies and you follow those strategies. You know, that's extremely important. I get amused sometimes when I hear people talk about, well, why don't they do this and why don't they do that? Well, you don't have a clue. There's a lot more involved than what meets the eye, especially when you have several branches of service. You have several divisions. You have several operations. Then you'd better be coordinated. You'd be shooting yourself. And so things have to be organized. So you have to have someone over the whole theater of operation. Okay?
Verse 10. When thou comest nigh unto a city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it. And it shall be, if it make the answer of peace, and open unto thee, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve thee.
So when Israel went up against the city, they were to give them the opportunity to surrender. If they accepted the offer, everyone in the city would become slaves to the Israelites. They would work for the Israelites. Okay? Now, this condition of peace was not extended to the cities or to the nations, the cities of the nations that God had commanded the Israelites to annihilate. There were seven nations. God said, you totally annihilate. You don't leave anything breathing there. And people today, you know, they have such a stupid mentality. I'm going to say it like it is. All this liberal garbage, they do not understand war. They don't understand what's going on. You get rid of evil by eradicating evil, not compromising with evil, nor negotiating with evil. God is saying, these seven nations have defiled the land. I want these seven nations totally annihilated. Evil will reproduce evil. Kill it all. So it can't reproduce. That's the mindset behind this. The spiritual principle of that is that you're not to compromise in your own life. You are to eradicate all that evil out of your life, not negotiating with anything. God's not going to negotiate with you. Get it all out. That's what this is pointing to, so it can't reproduce. Okay? And then in the case where they're going up against other cities that are not cities of these seven nations, then these cities can surrender and become slaves to the Israelites. But at least they're living. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Verse 12. And if it be... And if it will make no peace with thee, but will make war against thee, then thou shalt besiege it. And when the Lord thy God hath delivered it unto thy hands, and thou shalt smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword, but the women and the little ones and the cattle and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shalt thou take unto thyself, and thou shalt eat the spoil of thine enemies, which the Lord thy God hath given thee.
So the Israelites, if they came up against the city and they did not surrender, then they were surround the city, and the Lord declared that he would give them the city. And so when the army captured the city, they were to kill all the soldiers, all the males in that city, but they could take the spoil of that city, including the women and the children and the animals. But in those other seven nations, the cities of those seven nations, they were to kill everything. You follow me? Here they just eradicate the ones that who are opposed to them. Okay? I like the way they're saying it today in Israel. You neutralize them. Okay?
Thus shalt thou do unto all the cities which are very far off from thee, which are not of the cities of these nations, but of the cities of these people, which the Lord thy God doth give thee for an inheritance. Thou shalt save alive nothing that breatheth, but thou shalt utterly destroy them, but thou shalt utterly destroy them, namely, the Hittites and the Amorites, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, the Hivites and the Jebusites, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee.
So these seven nations, Hittites, Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, they were to annihilate, get rid of them, because they're evil people, and I'm giving you the land of those evil people, okay? Drive them out, take their land. Now listen to this. You say, well, they're taking somebody else's land. No, it's God's land. Mm-hmm. The earth is the Lord's. You just think you own property. You're not going to live forever. I'm going to tell you who the owner of every piece of property on earth is God. And so God has the right to say what nation occupies or does not occupy. And if that nation is in absolute rebellion against God and perverted in doing evil, then God has that prerogative of driving that nation out and putting someone in there to represent him. I could say a lot about that concerning even this nation of the United States of America, because we were not the first inhabitants here. So why were they driven out? Because they worshiped demons. I'll let you read the research and study all that. But God owns the land and God has the right to eradicate. God has the right to establish. Okay?
Verse
18. Let me say this. Something to understand is Israel, when we talk about their land, the promised land, their land included more than just the seven nations that they were to totally annihilate. You understand? See, there's other cities. We said that earlier. There were other cities that they could go up against and take that territory. Now, that city could make peace with them. And if that city made peace with them and surrendered to them, then it wasn't a matter of killing the people. It was a matter of bringing the people under subjection to Israel. Okay?
Verse 18, that they teach you not to do after all their abominations, which they have done unto their gods, so should you sin against the Lord your God.
So the purpose for destroying these nations was to prevent them from teaching Israel evil practices. If you leave them there, they will turn you away from God. Now, history tells us, you can read it right in the Bible, how Israel, every one of the tribes, that in their portion, their allotment, when they went into the promised land, they did not totally drive out the enemy. Now, they were told there'll be thorns in your sides or thorns in your eyes. And that's exactly what happened, and they turned them away from God because they learned their evil practices, their adulterous practices, and started intermarrying with these people who are worshiping demons and all that. And what did it do? It turned a whole nation away from God. That's why God said, totally annihilate it. Get rid of it. Because if you don't, it'll come back and haunt you. And that's what happened.
Verse 19. When thou shalt besiege a city a long time in making war against it to take it, thou shalt not destroy the trees thereof by forcing an axe against them, for thou mayest eat of them. And thou shalt not cut them down, for the tree of the field is man's life, to employ them in the siege. Only the trees which thou knowest that they be not trees for meat, thou shalt destroy and cut them down. And thou shalt build bulwarks against the city that maketh war with thee until it be subdued.
So when you besiege a city, you the city's surrounded where people can't come out. No one can go in. So you have that city isolated, okay? And so when they did this, and oftentimes they would, build bulwarks or ramparts, which were just defensive walls for them, okay, for the Israeli army. God said, when you do this, don't cut down the fruit trees. Because while you're set up in the siege, those fruit trees will provide food for you. You understand? And a lot of people don't understand this about war, and about the soldiers. You know, when you're out, what are you going to eat? You understand? People talk about hygiene and all this. They don't have a clue of what you go through. And it's not everything is going to kill you. I believe in hygiene. I believe in being clean. But I know what it's like to go a week without taking a bath, brushing your teeth, and all this other stuff. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to eat what you can find in the land. Okay? And so this is what he's saying to them. You can't just run to the Walmart or wherever. It's not there. Okay? So he said, use wisdom when you besiege a city. Don't cut down the thing that's going to feed you. You get that? Okay.
Before we move on, as we've been reading, I've been seeing a few things here in this chapter.
Go ahead.
And thinking about right at the beginning when we started in verse 5, and we were talking about, weeding out the people for the army. The thought came to me that sometimes less is more. And I was reminded of Gideon and how the Lord pared down that army. And what I see in this is when we do things the Lord's way, that's the right way. We can have our ideas and our opinions and our natural way of thinking, but oftentimes we miss it. And so I'm just reminded time and time again here is to keep our eyes on the Lord and to do things His way. Natural thinking leads us astray. But when we truly start trusting in Him and depending on Him and not leaning on our own understanding, we do better, don't we? And the thing about Israel that we see is, even when they moved on and they had their own kings and whatnot, they leaned on their own understanding. And they missed it. They violated the commands of the Lord. And so we can look at this, and I'm so grateful for Pete's military experience, because his experiences and the accounts that he has and what he shares with us can benefit all of us. But I don't I don't have any experience with the military. I don't know anything about fighting a war, and I'm grateful for that. But I can see principles in here as a lady that I can glean from the Lord. Number one, my natural mind would say, you know, a man that's just gotten married, chances are he's in the prime of his life. But he would be an excellent candidate first to be a soldier. Well, no, not if he's going to be so distracted he can't focus on the task at hand and he jeopardizes the men around him. What I'm trying to say here is even though we don't have specific laws like the Israelites have, very specific commandments, God writes the laws in our hearts. And so it's up to us to be sensitive and attentive to the Spirit on the inside of us and take heed to the commands that we're given. And they can come so subtly. But we need to pay attention, don't we? And follow what the Lord has commanded.
You know, as she said earlier, it's not how many, it's how committed. You understand? I think back, and we're talking many years ago, but I can think back and I can tell you the name. I know that that guy's got my backside. I don't even have to worry about him. There's others. I don't want to be paired up with them. You understand? Because I don't trust them. You want someone you can trust. It's the same way in ministry. You'll find that there's very few committed that will lay their life down. You understand? You don't need many. We just need a few good men. You understand? That's more than a cliche. It's a reality. Because with the few committed that will do whatever it takes, they'll lay their life on the line. That's how you win. That's how you overcome the enemy, whether it's a natural enemy, whether it's a spiritual enemy, you overcome through commitment. To where they love not their life unto death is what the scripture says. God's more important. Winning this thing for the Lord is more important. And so we're looking for commitment. That's what God's looking for. That's why he says there's few that's finding. It's a straight way, a narrow way, and only few find it. You understand? There's a purpose for boot camp. It weeds out. And then you get out of boot camp and you go through survival training. There's a purpose for survival training. You understand? It's conditioning you. Who is it that is going to stay committed? You understand? I've been amazed. You know, I went through survival training before I went to Vietnam. And in survival training, you survive, okay? And you're put in a mock POW camp. And you get treated like a POW to the point that it's a lot of mental harassment, physical things that your body says you can't go any farther, but you can go farther if you get your mind right. And then you go in to interrogation and beat you. I mean, crack your ribs like they did mine and all this type of stuff, trying to get you to talk and all that. I know what that stuff is, but I know what the purpose of it was. And you come out of there, when I came out of that, and the most beautiful thing I've ever seen is the American flag. Because I knew when that thing went up the pole that evening, it was over. I made it. Okay? Bruised up, beat up, but I made it. Okay? But here's the thing. It shows you that you can do things that you never dreamed you could do. So then when you get into the real life situation, you have the confidence that even though things are difficult and things don't look well, that you are an overcomer, not a succumber. I will do this. You understand? And so you're not thinking of dying for your country. You're thinking of the other man dying for his. You understand? Is that too hard for you? And you do what you have to do. You with me? And people don't understand. See, I'm of the era where they called them baby killers and all this type of stuff. Where they, you know, mock you and all that type of thing. But what do you do if you have a kid coming for you, coming towards you with a satchel charge on him? He is dead. He's already blown up. So are you going to let him blow you up? You do what you have to do. And until you've been there, and until you face the situation, then don't even talk to me. You understand? It's the same way with the enemy, with the devil in this life. If you haven't been there, then don't come and tell me what I'm doing is wrong. Not if it's working. You follow me? And I'm going to tell you, we are in a battle. This nation is in a spiritual battle. And it's time that we stand up and bear arms, spiritual arms, is what I'm talking about, okay? That's where we stand up, not backing down from the devil, not negotiating with the devil, but calling the devil, and instead of retreating, we get on the offense. Your best defense is always offense. You take him out, he can't take you out. I volunteered for patrols because I felt like I had a better chance of survival than laying down sleeping and a man coming in cutting my throat. You understand? I feel the same way about it spiritually, to be on the offense, not on the defense. Not trying to keep the devil out, taking what the devil's already stolen. Take it back. You with me? Am I too intense for you? This right here lights my fire. Okay? I thank God the psalmist says, he taught my hands to war. He teaches my hands to war. Okay? And I'm not being sadistic. I'm being realistic. You don't fight, you'll get whipped. That's what's wrong with the church today. The church hasn't stood up against the devil, and the devil's taken over the church. And it all runs a parallel. God has taught me so many things about spiritual warfare from the experience of the military that it works the same way with how the enemy will divert you to set up and warn me on things that has actually protected me. And I thank God for that. But you never let your guard down. You understand? It's an amazing thing. You develop a sixth sense, is all I know. I could be sound asleep, but I know the presence and would be wide awake. You understand? And when you come out of that combat zone, that sixth sense is still there. You understand? You come out of it, but that doesn't mean it came out of you. And so there's an adjustment back in. But then don't throw everything away. Use the experiences for your advantage. And God has taught me many things from experiences that work for my advantage in just the spiritual aspect of this thing. Okay? And so until you've walked a mile in that person's shoes, then don't try to identify with that person. You can't identify with what you haven't experienced. Okay? All right, I'll get off my bandwagon.
That's more profound, to use your phrase, that's more profound than we think. You can't identify with what you haven't experienced. The same holds true with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have our own personal experiences with the Lord. But in thinking about these directions and instructions that the Israelites are receiving to prepare for war, and we were drawing the parallel here with the natural and the spiritual, and we made the statement that we can't rely on our natural thinking, we also, to be effective in war, you cannot rely on your emotions to guide you. You have to be steadfast.
Emotions will get you killed. You better you better keep those emotions under control, and you better operate with your training. That's why you need to be spiritually trained. So you operate with spiritual training. You don't emotionally react to something the devil's bringing against you. We're not to live out of emotion. You understand? And you can't beat experience. I was just telling Heather today, I'll take on-the-job training over college classroom any day of the week. The hands-on. That's where you're going to learn. You can read all the war books you want to. You can read all the skill books you want to. But until you get in there and you actually do it, you don't know how. I was telling her, I took a course in, a correspondence course in automatic transmissions. I made an A. I couldn't have built an automatic transmission by light depended on. I didn't know anything about it. I knew what the book said, but I didn't know what the book was talking about. What's the planetary gear and the sun gear and overriding clutch and all this type stuff? I didn't know what that stuff was. I do today. But you know what? Experience. Hands on. That's how you know it. It's the same thing with the Word of God. It's going to come by experience. What you know about God will be by your experience. You may have information that someone else has told you, but what you know that you can absolutely put into practice is what you've experienced. And you've experienced, you put it to the test, you know it works. That's why we put so much emphasis on having experience with the Lord. Get into that Word till that Word gets into you. It's not what some preacher said. It's not what some teacher said, mama said, or whatever. It's what you know by the Spirit. God has given it to you as revelation in your heart. Then you can put it into practice.
You know, the Word of God had to get into the hearts of these Israelites that were getting ready to be prepared for battle. This word that Moses spoke to the nation of Israel was inspired by God. So they had to get it in their hearts that the Lord God, the Lord your God, is He that goes with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. They had to have that in their heart, and they had to walk by faith, operate by faith that the Lord was going to be with them, that He was going to fight with them against their enemies, that they would be saved. And even when we see further on in verse 13, and the Lord your God has delivered, speaking of those, the cities or the areas that were against them, into your hands. They had to believe that, accept that, operate by faith that that was a true statement, that that land was theirs. You see the parallel for what we have to do too? We have a promised land, don't we?
Absolutely.
And so we too are conquering territory. Here a little, there a little, right? We operate by faith. The Lord is good, isn't He? He's so good. Now y'all remember that Deuteronomy is a summary, right? And so it sounds like we're getting ready to jump around, but we're changing gears here with this 21st chapter. And this chapter records laws concerning murder, marriage, firstborn rights, rebellious children, and capital punishment.
And look for the principle. Always look for the principle. This is not just a history lesson. We take history and glean the principle out of the history. Okay? And so there's things that actually we can use that will apply to us. And that's what we're looking for.
Verse 1. If one be found slain in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee to possess it, lying in the field, and it be known who has slain him, then thy elders and thy judges shall come forth, and they shall measure unto the cities which are round about him that is slain.
God doesn't sweep anything under the rug and just say, oh, well, we couldn't figure it out, you know. So if a body was found that had been killed, lying in a field and nobody knew who killed the person. Then the elders and judges of the cities were to come out and determine which city was closest to the slain body. All right, the city that's closest to the slain body must take responsibility for that body being slain. Okay? There has to be blood shed for blood that's been shed. That's God's principle. Okay? Pointing to Jesus, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay? Now, I'll tell you what, our time's about up. I don't want to just get in this right and get off the horse in the middle of the stream, okay? So after the break, we'll come back to this and get into this and show you how important it is to follow the mandates of God to keep God's blessing on your land.